Sunday night's main event. We are on the air.
Are we? Are we on the air? Do we know? Can we tell?
I believe we're on the air. I think.
All right.
I think officially, Mouth, this is an after party.
It is. It's definitely a party of some time because I have a large glass with this nice golden liquid inside of it.
Oh.
A Trooper Iron Maiden glass filled with beautiful Great Lakes premium lager, of course. Best beer for pay-per-views.
Absolutely. Keeping us hydrated and motivated. I love it. I had a couple of Great Lakes this evening. I'm switching to water for the podcast myself. But yeah, and absolutely a great show tonight, man. Some good times. I wish it was like 10 degrees cooler in Toronto. Other than that, life is good. Wrestling is good.
Yeah, this was a very interesting show. Despite having 11 matches, it didn't really feel like it was too long. The show was well-paced. I want to say right off the top, before we even get into the matches or anything, and as strong as some of the performances were in the ring, I think the strongest performances of the night were our commentary team. I thought Ian Riccaboni, and in particular, Caprice Coleman. I mean, I always liked him on Ring of Honor, but ever since they've been bringing him into AEW and stuff for the ROH-style matches, and tonight, he friggin' hit it out of the ballpark, man. He had backstories on everybody. They had anytime historical elements from the Ring of Honor's past were relevant to his story, he was right on top of it. Like, they knew, this is the first time I've seen someone so consciously, they know that, hey, a lot of new eyes are on our product tonight. And they kept on that and on that. So I was just really, I really think that Riccaboni and Caprice were the players of the night, because they just, like, we had so many matches here that didn't really have stories ahead of time and stuff. And these guys managed to put most of the stuff in perspective, keep it going. Like, I just thought that, like, they're the best team happening right now. I'm sorry, but these two were fantastic tonight.
That's a bold statement, man. The best part, the best team going today is a bold statement, but you might be onto something. They had a fantastic night. Like you said, especially Caprice Coleman. I thought they did an incredible job here. And they weaved in the backstory as well while still calling the matches, still giving you a sports-based presentation. So, yeah, I really liked it a lot.
Especially and as well too, Caprice and Regal, when Regal was with them, Caprice and Regal really did a great job of explaining how holds worked and why that hurts and why that's doing and how you do that. Like, there were a couple times Regal said stuff where you're just kind of like, wow, that's like, it was unbelievable. So I thought the commentary team really did a great job, especially since a lot of these matches didn't have any stories to go along with it. It looks like my partner on AEW Weekly here, my fellow old fuck, Mr. Aguinaldo, has joined us. Joe, you managed to make it through. You sounded like you were kind of sleepy near the, like, you were sleepy during the pregame show.
You know what? I really, 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 really wanted to like this pay-per-view. And at the end of the day, like, the in-ring was good, but you kind of touched on it. Because there wasn't a lot of story lead up to a lot of the matches, I just found myself not really getting invested.
I agreed to a certain extent. I agree. I felt the show started strongly, got somewhat a little bit weaker in the middle because that was mostly the matches that didn't have stories, and then came back strong for the last two matches because they did have solid stories, and not to mention killer matches as well. So it was an interesting show. So let's get into it here because we got a lot to cover. We'll start with the pregame show, although quickly. We had three matches on the pregame show. Colt Cabana against Anthony Henry. Basically, Colt wins with the moonsault off the top. I don't think we really have much to say about that. Is this Colt's new place? Are we just going to see him in Ring of Honor?
Oh, absolutely. I think, and arguably it's the best place for him. I think this is like, the fans loved him. I thought this was a good match. He had a good match with a young up and coming wrestler. Sure. Why not? I think this is pretty much where he's slotted right now.
Okay. So next we had the Shinobi Shadow Squad, which is Eli Isom and Cheeseburger. Glad to see Cheeseburger still around. And they took on the Trust Busters, which are Ari Daivari and Slim J. Man, Caprice Coleman could not say enough to put over Slim J in this match, man. Wow. He was all over that. And it ended with Daivari pinning Eli Isom again, not really much to say about the match.
Yeah, again, good match. Nothing on the show was bad at all. Slim J with the Chris Kanyon vibes. Wacky right. moves all right. over the place. Yeah.
Okay, so this was cool. This was interesting. Next, we go backstage. It's Lexi with Prince Nanya. And, of course, he's like an ROH staple, right? He's been, you know, the embassy, the whole deal. He's been such a part of the product for so long. Well, he's back, and he closed a huge deal, he says, and he basically bought out Tully Blanchard Enterprises. So now all the talent that Tully just had recently, like Jonathan Grisham and like the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage, they are all now with Prince Nanya. He talked about his wealth. It was great. Even Prince Nanya in his promo acted in a way that if you're watching for the first time, he gave his own basic backstory, talked about his rich family and all that kind of stuff. So there you go. So I don't know what happened to Tully here and why they even put them with Tully to begin with if they were going to take them away from Tully so quickly. So I was a little bit confused by that, but I don't mind seeing Prince Nanya back. He's a great character.
100%. Yeah, he cut a good promo here. Like you said, gave a little backstory in a clever way, explained it like, Lexi, you don't know who I am? Well, let me tell you who I am. And yeah, the embassy is back. Sure. I guess, like, I don't know, maybe Tully Blanchard wasn't enthused with being a manager in Ring of Honor. Maybe his contract is up. Who knows? But it seems like they wrote him off of this deal.
Yes.
Pretty seriously.
Yeah, and again, so quickly, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was just surprised that they put him in place, and now you're taking him out of it already. Yeah. It seems kind of weird there. And then the final match of the warm-up show was Tony Deppen, Blake Christian, and Alex Zane against the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage. Cage certainly has not gotten any smaller in the time he's been away. Good Lord. During this match was the first chance you really got to see how actually great this looked to see a big crowd at a Ring of Honor show. Like, they did a wide crowd shot during this match. And I'm like, wow, that might be one of the, outside of maybe the Madison Square Garden show, this has got to be one of the biggest Ring of Honor crowds I've ever seen. It was like, you know, a full regular sized arena.
Yeah, absolutely. It looked great. Sometimes Ring of Honor shows don't look so good.
Oh, God. Past. I've been to ones they shot here in Toronto, and then you see them on TV, and it's just horrible.
Yeah, you're like, what? That's not the building that I was in. That's a closet. Absolutely. But yeah, it looked good, sounded good. Fight TV, personally, it was giving me a little trouble at the start, but we worked it out, and I think, like, about a third of the way through the show, it kind of was clear sailing from then on. So yeah, no, I agree 100%. Good production from Ring of Honor for once.
And again, this match really, I mean, it was a good match, but I mean, nothing really of note. And Deppen got the pin on, Deppen got pinned by Brian Cage. And then finally we had Widow Nightingale versus Allison Kay. I missed a lot of this match because I was having my dinner. So, and I didn't even catch the finish. How did this one end, Matthew?
This was, I quite enjoyed this match. Probably the six-man was the best match of the pre-show, but this was right up there. Willow Nightingale looked great. She won with like a sit-out doctor bomb. And planted Allison Kay. Allison Kay sold it like death, stayed folded up for like a minute after. And yeah, it was a big win for Willow Nightingale. I like this match a lot.
So that's the matches. And honestly, none of them really had any major consequences or anything of note. And in fact, none of them were really matches that would make me want to buy the pay-per-view. However, they did run some really good vignettes building up certain matches that they did have stories in place for. And I thought those were actually the highlight of the warm-up show. And I thought those would actually be convincing for people who might be familiar with some of them or maybe not, or just see these and think, okay, maybe I should order that. I thought that was honestly the best part of the warm-up show was the vignettes for the matches.
Yeah, a couple of them were absolutely excellent. The Briscoes one, especially Briscoes and FTR, was just, tugging at the heartstrings. I did think the six-man maybe could hook one or two people, but I agree. The highlight was certainly the promo packages.
All right, so that gets us through the hours. What was it called? Zero Hour?
I believe it was the Zero Hour, yes.
Why did they? I don't know why you called it that. I thought that was kind of a weird choice. Okay, so into the main show here, Death Before Dishonor. We're, of course, in Lowell, Massachusetts at the Tsonga Center. I don't know who Tsonga is, but sounds to me like he should be a wrestler, whoever he is. This was really crazy. They decided to start with the ROH World Title match, a match that many of us would thought would be at the end. Well, that's not true, because even, I think, I'm pretty sure they mentioned even before, it might have either in the pregame show or before this, that it was confirmed that FTR and Briscoes would headline. That was, we kind of knew that going in, so we knew this match wouldn't be there. But I did not expect it to be the opening match, and I'm sure nobody did. No one would expect the world title match to open the pay-per-view.
No, absolutely not. I guess it was in the theory of wrestling booking that you put your second most important match first to, like, you know, set the show off right. But yeah, no, this shocked me. I expected this to go second last.
It's, you know? This, like, wasn't UFC what. Card. Yeah, I mean, I really didn't think this was the right opening match. Now that the show is done, I really think the Wheeler Yuta and Garcia match, I think, would have been better in this spot. Maybe even just flip those two matches, and I think things would have been better. So, well, let's get into this. So this was interesting. I mean, it was a good match. It was a short match, though. It was only 10 minutes, which I thought was very surprising. Of course, it's Claudio Castagnoli challenging the champion, Jonathan Grisham. Regal comes out with Claudio and goes over and does commentary. Crowd's pretty excited for this. They've got the dueling chance for both guys going off the start. They're doing a lot of, like, you know, your classic style wrestling, strength-based stuff like that. Claudio did the swing very early, and he really gave him a swing. And Grisham did a great job of selling how disoriented he was, although he probably wasn't selling very much because Claudio swung him for a long time. It was great. It was a really kind of old school mix, the British style as well. So, of course, Regal was great doing the commentary. Did you catch, Matthew, that one Claudio? He was kind of like doing like a bear hug thing, but they're in the ropes and he's hanging Grisham like over the ropes, but doing a bear hug at the same time. Crazy move.
Yeah. And then he was basically gut wrench suplexed him while they were both like hanging on the ropes. Like the amount of strength it would take to not even be planted on the earth, but just be hanging from ropes and to be able to suplex somebody. Cesaro's a freak, man. It's absolutely insane. That was like one of the craziest spots of the entire show. Honestly, yeah. It was.
I thought that was an amazing, crazy move. Claudio got a backbreaker for a near fall. Grisham, this whole time, though, he's going after Claudio's knee. And this was great. So, because, like, Grisham was having the issues with his back, Claudio's having problems with his knees, and both guys did a really good job of selling him. And they would do spots like, you know, Grisham would do a spot where he'd get the advantage, but he'd land on his back, and then that would be bugging him. Or Claudio would try to pick him up for a move and wouldn't be able to do it because his knee was bugging him. So I thought it was really great back and forth stuff. They did a ton of near falls. The crowd really got into it. There was a "This is awesome" chant at one point. And eventually Claudio gets that kind of sit-down powerbomb and the pin, and he wins the title. So very surprising title. First off, title change, and secondly, in such a short match, I mean, it's the opening match. It doesn't have to be short. I don't know why. I thought they would have done a much longer match. I'm not surprised they put it on Claudio, because I think they want the belt to still be on TV. And since he's in Regal's group, he'll still be on Dynamite and that. And so you'll still see that ROH title, out there. So I enjoyed the match. I love the two of them worked together really well. Were you surprised, though, Matt, by how short it was? Because to me, I thought it was really short.
100%. Yeah. Wiki has it at 11:30, and they had the 6-man tag on the pre-show at 11:35. So the world title match went shorter than something on the pre-show, apparently, which is surprising. Yeah. I thought there was a lot of meat left on this bone. And then all of a sudden it's Re-Cola 1-2-3. And that's the end of Jonathan Gresham's world title. But yeah, I thought it was a great match all the same, but it just shocked at how brief it was. Like you said,
what happens to Grisham now?
Oof, that's
right?
Tough. That's,
yeah,
tough.
Exactly.
This, like, was like a decisive loss in, yeah, like 10 minutes, and he's kind of left in limbo. That's tough. Did he?
Yeah.
Am I seeing Joe Aguinaldo says he deleted his Twitter? Oh, no. Ugh.
Who did?
I assume Jonathan. Gresham?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So, well, what did you think, Joe, of this whole opening match here? Where is he?
Number one, I was shocked that it was the opener.
Of course.
And then number two, I was shocked it was that short. And I, to be honest with you, this very early put a bad taste in my mouth because I knew that these two, I know these two can go. And like, if this was just Jonathan Gresham versus Claudio in just a match, cool. Let it be the opener. This is the Ring of Honor world title. And that's your opening match. Sorry, man.
Okay. All right. Well, then Then let's try to figure out. Now we've seen the whole show. Why was it placed there?
I don't know, because it was not a good place for it. I thought it made the Ring of Honor title look weak. I think you could have put Wheeler Yuta Garcia before that.
I think if the match had been a little bit longer and a little bit more dramatic, not saying it wasn't dramatic, but if it had been a little bit longer, more dramatic, I don't think we'd be crabbing. I think the main issue here is that the title match went in such a quick fashion. And that's, to me, I didn't really mind it being positioned as the opening match. Plus, they were pushing that this match already had 6 title matches. And so it didn't really bother me that much that it started, but it did bother me that, like Matt said, Claudio won so decisively and it happened so quickly, especially when we had a match in the main event that literally went an hour. So I do not understand. And there's no reason why this had to be 10 minutes. And there certainly are other matches that came afterwards that either didn't need to be there at all, or you could have taken time off of those. So I don't really understand that. I'll be curious to see, because I'm sure someone will ask Tony Khan about that in the scrum afterwards. I'd like to know what his thinking was on that.
Okay, but I will leave you with one thing or a couple things. Like, you know, one of the things that we tend to complain about as wrestling fans is that your world titles are not treated with respect, i.e. WWE. So, like, to me, this is what that is. I mean, imagine...
I disagree. I disagree.
Yeah, but imagine if they had put an IWGP match as the opening match of Wrestle Kingdom. You don't think people aren't going to complain about that? You don't think people aren't going to be happy about that?
I do think that's apple and oranges, because in New Japan, it's a slightly different approach. I don't see it as a problem here, because you're saying the title was disrespected. The title was not disrespected. The title was defended in a very good match. I don't really think putting it as the first match cheapens it as a title. I don't buy that. If it had been a crappy match with a poor finish and it cheapened the title, sure, but putting it in the opening spot, still giving them a great title match, I don't think it really cheapens the title, or at least I don't see it that way. It takes a little bit more to cheapen it, I think, than just putting it in the opening spot.
Yeah, I agree to disagree with you,
yeah,
man.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay.
Because here's the last thing I'll leave you with. Jonathan Gresham and Claudio, your world title match opened up for the boys.
All right, fair enough. You have to put something to calm the audience down after the title match. That's going to be my defense of why that match was next. And it was next. Well, actually, we had a quick little promo backstage. Lexi was with Daniel Garcia. He says, I'm not going to take the title from Wheeler Yuta, not because I want it, but because I want to take it. No, he says, I'm going to take the title from him, not because I want it, but because I want to take it from him. He's taking the belt to AEW, and he says he's going to smash it on Dynamite.
Yeah, I love that. I was hoping he would win, pull the old Mr. Perfect angle and actually smash the title.
This led to the righteous group, which is Vincent, Bateman, and Dutch. They're the 6-man tag champs here in Ring of Honor. And it was Dalton Castle and the boys challenging here. I thought this was great, since I always make a joke about this. When it went dark at the beginning, before anybody came to the ring, it went dark in the arena, and Caprice and Ian made jokes about the electric bill not being paid, which I thought was great. Someone actually acknowledged it rather than just being in fear or whatever. They kind of made fun of it. And now, are the righteous, answer me this, guys, are the righteous the House of White? Like, are these basically, it looked to me like House of Black, except they all dressed in white.
I love it. Yeah, the House of Cream or off beige. Yes, I love it.
Very strange. And but the one guy, Dutch, he was great. He's a huge guy. He totally looks like, you know, Big Boss Man. In fact, I think Caprice Coleman mentioned Big Bubba Rogers in that. And but this guy was good. This guy Dutch, he's really good. Big, fast moving guy. The crowd's definitely not into this match as much as they were the first match. It's, you know, it's got silly stuff. Dalton's using the boys as weapons, tossing them over the top rope to land on guys. The valet of the Righteous, this girl named Vida, she interfered a bunch of times. She had a moonsault up the ropes to the outside, which is pretty crazy. And Dutch, of course, another one of these big guys that has to do crazy jumps and leaps over the top rope. He's doing somersaults all over the place, making boy pancakes by landing on the boys. And the finish, Castle got Bateman in that kind of airplane spin power bomb thingy. He pins them. They win the title. So another title change here, Dalton and the boys. I don't know. Six-man tag titles in any promotion to me are really just kind of a waste of time. So it didn't do much for me. And plus, we had no real story going into this either.
Well, this very much was the filler match, although I did like it for I liked it for what it was, though. Like you said, Dutch, they even called it out, the Big Boss Man vibe.
Yeah.
Dutch was the MVP of this match, I thought. And yeah, Dalton Castle wins with the bangerang. Wiki has it at 9:40 on this one. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I think the right team won. Put these weird filler belts on Dalton Castle and the boys. Why not?
Okay, so the parade of title matches continue, and we have the Wheeler Yuta against Daniel Garcia for the Pure title here. This to me, I think maybe if you had switched maybe this and the Grisham and Claudio, it might have been a better fit. This one, they gave him 15 minutes. Regal comes back to do commentary on this one, and we see former Pure champions at ringside as judges. I enjoyed this match. I thought it was really good. I mean, these two guys worked out together so well. They're battling all over the outside. I love some of the stuff Regal said in the commentary, and this was great. He said he didn't want Garcia to be in the Blackpool Combat Club because we can't have all the good athletes and we would have no opponents. So we're not going to take him. We're going because we need to fight him. I thought that was pretty funny when he did that whole spiel.
Yeah, Regal was, like you said, amazing on this show. That was a great line talking about like how badly the cauliflower ear burns how devastating a weapon it is. Yeah, Regal just a genius level commentator in terms of explaining the science of wrestling.
And Caprice too. Again, the two of them together. That's not with the cauliflower ear. And they're like, oh yeah, even after you drain it, it still hurts really bad. Like it was hilarious.
Yeah, a couple old pros just going back and forth about their war wounds.
Comparing cauliflower ears. and speaking of ears, Garcia actually bit Yuta's ear at one point, which I don't think qualifies as a move for the Pure Championship, I don't think.
Yeah, they should probably put that on the rule book. No biting of ears, the Mike Tyson rule.
Yeah, I would say so. We actually didn't go through the rules. This one is slightly different, right? Because you do only have 3 rope breaks per performer. Once you use them all up, if you are caught up in the ropes or under the ropes, you can be pinned. You can't use them after that. So that was part of it as well, the rope breaks.
Another big thing with the Pure matches is like the punches. The referee is supposed to be way more stringent with the punches. You're not allowed to closed fist punch, but I thought Garcia was doing an awesome job, like slapping and palm striking him. Striking Yuta and then showing the referee my fist is open, like I slapped him or like I palm struck him. So I thought that was a pretty clever addition to the match as well.
There was they eventually got to a point where one of them had to use I think Yuta had Garcia in the Walls of Jericho finally, and Garcia had to use a rope break there, but I think that was the only one in the whole match was the one rope break. So I don't think Yuta used any. I don't think Garcia did any more. Here's another great example of Regal. Garcia laid out Yuta with that nasty looking pile driver and went to pin him, and he kicked out, and Regal explained to us why he wasn't as hurt by the pile driver because he turns his head in a different way and it doesn't hit as hard. And I'm like, I can't believe this. He's explaining all this crazy stuff because constantly we think, oh, come on, you shouldn't be kicking out of a pile driver, right?
Yeah, I love it. They have the pile driver magic in the Blackpool Combat Club. I love it.
Yeah. So you and Yuta gets the pin here, so he retains the title. No change here. Yuta goes to shake hands with Garcia afterwards, but he gives him the finger. And in fact, Garcia walks all the way up the ramp, giving the finger to the ROH Death Before Dishonor sign in the back there. So there you go.
But it was
a good match, and there was no reason to change the title, really, I didn't think.
No, not yet. Let Yuta have a run here. Let him have some good matches where he comes out on top. I think that is what needs to happen. Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. One of my favorite matches on the show for sure. I saw in the chat there was a question, which I prefer. What's the best between Heritage Cup rules from NXT UK and these pure rules matches? I do lean Heritage Cup, but they're very similar. But I don't know. Heritage Cup has the rounds, the 2 out of 3 falls. I think it's more exciting all the time.
Alrighty. After this, this was the brother versus brother match. So this is Roosh against his younger brother, Dragon Lee. So that's basically the story that we have in here, the two brothers going at it. And not because there was, I like how they played that it wasn't because it was a rivalry. It was because they just wanted to show themselves as two of the best wrestlers to the rest of the world. So I thought that was kind of a neat approach. They shook hands and hugged to start the match. You know, lots of back and forth chain wrestling, lots of obviously lucha style stuff in this as well. I love the idea of Roosh as the older brother taunting his younger brother, Dragon Lee. He kept pie facing him and stuff like that. You know, it was kind of the idea that he could outwit him because he was a little bit smarter, and Dragon Lee would try stuff and then Roosh would always get the advantage back. So I like the way they worked that in there. They went nuts on the outside for quite a while. Roosh threw him all over the place, threw him into probably every guardrail he could. And it was great because when he was doing that, the announcers talked about how that's a regular part of Roosh's repertoire and something he does all the time. They really had that thinking cap on for the person that might not know anything about Ring of Honor. Like someone that just went, you know, fine, I'm going to watch this show. I know nothing. Like they did a great job for that person.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I thought the story of this match where Dragon Lee was like you said, the scrappy young little brother, and Roosh is just slowly becoming more and more of a dick.
Yeah.
Just like slowly losing his temper,
right?
Throwing him. And I just thought, yeah, this match was right up there with some of the best on the show too.
I agree. I really enjoyed this match. They did a crazy spot where Dragon Lee had Roosh on the outside. He put him on the timekeeper's table. Then he ran back in the ring and he did this freaking crazy dive where he basically torpedoed Roosh right onto the table. It, really crazy looking spot there.
Dragon Lee is such an incredible athlete that he clipped his feet on that. He like actually like hit the rope and still made it onto the table. He almost ate shit pretty bad, but he made it. He made it.
They get back into the ring. They're going nuts. The forearms back and forth. They did other spots later where they're chopping the crap out of each other back and forth. They did a great spot where they each tried to do their own finisher to the other guy at the same time. And they basically just kind of take each other out. So they're just lying around. They get on the apron at one point, going crazy, doing chops. And in fact, when they're on the apron, Lee runs at him, gives him a belly to belly to the floor. That was friggin' crazy. And then Lee, after that, he tried to do the Hurricane Rana to Roosh off from the apron to the floor, but he did it, but it kind of fell apart. It didn't quite look as smooth as it could have. And they did the classic spot too in this one because they talked about how you get a 20 count. So they did the classic spot where they both dive in at 19 and a half just to make the count just in time. Roosh managed to get his one big move in, the bull's horn, which is kind of the drop kick to the guy sitting in the corner. He went for the pin, but Lee managed to kick out. And then, you know, Dragon Lee would start to get his big moves happening, but Roosh would always thwart him. And that this was great. I really love this. At one point, Roosh was playing possum, basically, and he was acting like he was hurt and messed up. And it's like, oh, can the match continue? Kind of feigning an injury. And then so he totally suckers Lee, kicks him in the head, gives him another bull's horn, gets the pin, and wins. So, yeah, he really was the dick in this one, deceiving his own brother, playing possum with his own brother in a match just to get the win. Yeah, I loved the story, and I loved the match. I thought it was great.
Absolutely. Soccer's his brother in, and the announcers were disgusted, properly disgusted by his actions. This was an add-on tacked on to the card, and I actually was kind of Lucha's hit and miss, right? But this was what, like, this was the dark horse match of the show. Like, obviously, I think the main event was probably the best match of the show, but this match was right up there. This was awesome. It wasn't just a collection of crazy moves. It told a clear
story
story throughout, but it was also a collection of crazy ass moves. I just thought this was a banger. You know what? They should have maybe opened the show with this.
Yes.
Right.
You know what, Matthew? That's a great idea. That would have been a totally great opening match. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Flip that and the world title match, baby. Yeah.
All right. So after this, we had the women's title match. So Mercedes Martinez defending the title against Serena Deeb. This one, I actually had the time. They went 18 minutes on this one. They did shake hands at the beginning. I love it. Mercedes, she does one of my old favorite moves that Otani used to do in New Japan all the time, where the guy is kind of slumped in the corner and he runs and gives him the drop kick right through the other side. She did that. I love that spot. This one overall, it wasn't bad, but there I was conflicted because I couldn't tell if they were doing this to make it look more like a real fight. But I thought it looked a little rough in spots, like they would go to try to do something and it would seem like they weren't always in the right spot. But I also think maybe they were just trying to make it look like a real fight.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't clean, but it was in a good way, though. I do think it was like by design. I do think it was on purpose.
There was one part where Serena speared Mercedes on the apron, which looked crazy. I loved it. Serena actually set her up in the classic old Sullivan tree of woe, hanging upside down in the corner, gave her a drop kick. They did this great spot where I don't know if one of them was trying to put on the figure four on the other, but they were both sitting down on the mat and they just started kicking each other. They just started kicking each other in the head over and over again. This was nasty. There was one, Martinez did the German off the top, and Serena came down very heavy on the shoulders and her head. That was a pretty intense German there.
There were a couple rough landings for Deeb, especially in this match, for sure. Yeah, that chief among them. That was gross.
Martinez went for the surfboard at one point, but Deeb stopped it by biting her. So we have a bit of biting on this pay-per-view.
Shark Week.
Yeah, I guess maybe. Is that the tie-in? Deeb came back with the wax on wax off the swinging neck breaker that she does. And Deeb got the Serenity lock, but Martinez actually managed to get out of it. And she went for the ankle lock, but then Martinez threw her into the turnbuckle, which actually looked really good, looked really nasty. And then Martinez got the OG drop, which is kind of like her version of the Razor's Edge. But Deeb kicked out of that, and then Martinez eventually got her back in the surfboard and got that sleeper finisher on her. And Deeb had to tap, and it was good. She didn't tap right away. She sold it for a bit, and then she finally tapped. So, yeah.
Banger of a match again. Like, there wasn't a bad thing on this show. Brad the Dad says, this is a pretty hot take. Best women's match in either AEW or Ring of Honor to date this year. Ooh. That's what Brad says. One off the top of my head that I can think of perhaps contends is Thunder Rosa, Dr. Britt Baker cage match. That was a banger. That's the only thing that's coming to mind, though.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it because, again, it seemed like a fight. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I like that. And Martinez and Deeb are both that kind of style of workers where it's like it's a fight. You know, it's not really about being pretty and stuff like that. So I really enjoy that. In fact, didn't Caprice make some kind of crack about, like, this ain't no beauty contest or something like that?
I think that was great. It was in the build-up video, I believe. I heard
Is that
it a couple
it was?
Times. I've heard it a couple times, so I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was good. Actually, I don't think Caprice was good in all those build-up videos, for sure. All right, now we get to where the middle part was kind of, you know, it had some good moments, but now is when the show really starts to kick into gear here, and this final half is pretty amazing, I thought.
Yeah, definitely, starting with the spectacular build-up video for Samoa Joe and Jay Lethal. That match is coming up next, and they did a really good job explaining the 20-year odyssey leading us here.
Yeah, well, that's the, again, they're so great with history. Like, it's funny because, you know, for so many years with WWE in control, history is ignored, or they rewrite it, or they don't use it. Like, this was so great at taking so much of Ring of Honor's history and making good use of it and creating big time stories in that. This was great. I guess it was on the pre-show that Dutt and Lethal and Singh did that promo, and they're all in the white suits, and Sanjay Dutt goes, "You know what happens? You know why people in India wear white suits? You know the only time they wear white suits? Only during a funeral. And Joe, it's going to be your funeral." And I thought, oh my God, I thought that was amazing. Thought it was great. So they're all in white. Those guys are all in white suits. And actually, Dutt and Singh come out with Lethal for the match, but he tells them no. He actually tells no, go stay in the back, and he sent them to the back. So that was pretty cool. This was insane, like right out of the gates. Like, they basically just ran at each other up the alley. And in fact, they must have went, what, like a good 10 minutes or so before the match actually started, just brawling all over the place. This was crazy. And Joe, I mean, we haven't seen Joe for a while. He had his hair cut extremely short, pretty well almost shaved. And he just looked possessed. At the beginning of this match, he just looked possessed. And at this point, this is where the crowd starts to wake up. Even though you and I might have enjoyed those matches, they were pretty well sitting on their hands for a lot of them for the mid part of the show. But boy, they came back after this one, man. So yeah, they're outside the ring going at it. I have written down here, has this match even started? But then I think right after I wrote that down, Caprice Coleman said, no, the match hasn't started. So Joe was going to put Lethal through a table, but then Singh comes out to help. And Caprice Coleman's right on the explanation, like, well, you know, the match hasn't started yet. That's okay. It's not the match yet. He can interfere. And they put Joe's arm in the chair, and they ran it into the post. And then he threw Joe into the ring, but the ref wouldn't ring the bell because Joe was hurting. And then finally he sends Singh to the back. And after he sends Singh to the back, then they ring the bell. So, of course, because Joe's hurting from that beatdown outside, Lethal beats on him for quite a while. But, of course, Joe eventually comes back. And Joe's still doing his crazy dives. He has not put those to bed yet. Was going nuts on that one. Lethal got the Lethal combination for a near fall at one point. Joe went for the muscle buster at one point, but Jay turned it into the Lethal injection. But then Joe kicked out of that. This match was filled with a lot of spots where you thought it was going to end and somebody would kick out. Dutt runs down eventually for the distraction. And so that allows Lethal to grab the title belt, and he corks Joe with the belt, but Joe kicks out. And then Joe gets the coquina clutch on, and Jay was forced to tap, and Joe retains. I mean, I've condensed it here, but this match was fantastic. Crowd really helped on this one, too. They were so into it. And both guys worked like freaking maniacs in this. Like, they were both so intense the entire distance of the match.
100%. It's like you said, they went 9-10 minutes before the match started, and then they went in there and just went balls to the wall the entire time that they were wrestling their actual match. So yeah, yet another fabulous wrestling match here. Some awesome near falls, some false finishes, as they say. Crowd ate it up. Yeah, man. Ring of Honor really showed out for themselves. And this was a couple Ring of Honor veterans. Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor, arguably, like, in kayfabe, he's their Hulk Hogan, their Goldberg, right? Their big bad, right? So he shouldn't have lost this yet. And he took a lot of abuse, and he came up from it, and he stood tall, and he's Shao Kahn. He is the final boss of Ring of Honor, despite the fact that he only has the TV title. But yeah, no, I loved the match. Loved it. Yet again, another banger on this show.
And again, this one did have the advantage of having great story going into it. We had Joe missing for weeks. We just had Lethal and Dutt out there mouthing off every week. So I kind of like the fact that we didn't see Joe in any of the buildup, because I thought, to me, it really added to the intensity when you did finally see him, because he was so intense and crazy and everything. So I dug that. I thought great match, like excellent great match.
Matthew Smith says Joe is more of a Goro with fewer arms. Can see it. I can see the family resemblance there.
Okay, so this leads to the main event of the show. It's FTR against the Briscoes, the rematch for the tag titles, and this one is 2 out of 3 falls. Yeah, this was insane. This was 50 minutes long. It started at 10:08, and I think it finished at like 10:48 or something like that. Or it might have been even right, I guess a little bit later than that, around 10:51 or something. Crazy, crazy long match, but it's 2 out of 3 falls. And thankfully, unlike Mexico, they didn't just do the first 2 falls super quick and then go straight to the 3rd fall. They actually worked this one out big time. And this is this, they also were great in this of really making you bite. Like, there were so many times where you're biting on, okay, that's the fall. And it still wouldn't happen. Or that's the fall. It still wouldn't happen. Like, it was so good that way. Very, very great at keeping you on top of things and interested. They isolated Cash out of the beginning. They work him over. The Briscoes get the first fall with the Doomsday device on Dax. They get him. They pin him. So Briscoes get that early win. I love it when they do the Doomsday device.
Yeah. Love that it was respected. What led to a 1-2-3. The Doomsday device secretly is right up there with the Canadian Destroyer, and that everyone kicks out of it all the time now, and it sucks. It should be a finish. So I like that this beat a man.
Mm-hmm. This was insane because they were chopping each other so crazy. Dax's chest was actually busted open from chops. He did not blade. It was busted open, and it looked sufficient. Like, they looked like a fairly big friggin' cut too. Like, it was crazy.
I don't know if I've ever seen that. I haven't watched the full Kenta Kobashi back catalog. There might be some matches. Well,
no,
before,
but you
I'm
know
sure
what?
This.
Though,
I've never
no,
seen
no,
it.
You know what, Matt? No, no. Most of the times in those classics with Misawa, Kobashi, and Kawada, red chest. But I don't remember anyone ever bleeding and stuff like that. Their chest would be like completely, you know, beat red, but I don't remember anyone actually ever getting busted open that much.
I don't think I've ever seen it, ever.
I mean, there was just so much stuff in this match. I mean, my notes here are insane. Dax did like the super back suplex off the top on Jay, but instead of trying to pin him, he tried to tag in Cash, but then of course Jay pulls him off the ramp. That allows the Briscoes to get the redneck boogie on Dax, but he kicked out of that. Dax, of course, finally gets the hot tag. Cash comes in. He goes wild. He gets a brainbuster on one of them for a near fall. Dax gets back in there. He did the gory special to Jay, but he kicked out. Now they're off brawling in the crowd because it's Briscoes. You know, there's got to be at least some brawling in the crowd. That's a big thing here, too. The Briscoes, like usually with the Briscoes, you work a Briscoe-style match. This time, Briscoes worked an FTR-style match. This was not your classic Briscoes with tons of plunder and garbage and stuff like that. This was like you got to see the Briscoes as wrestlers rather than like just, you know, corking each other over the head with shit all the time.
That's funny. The Briscoes have been in some of the wildest matches that I've ever seen. Briscoes versus Kevin Steen and El Generico. Those things were insane. Like,
yeah,
truly could have taken years off of people's lives. Like, yeah. So I think the first match too was kind of a little more of a Briscoes match. So I think you're bang on. I think you're bang on. Yeah.
At one point, Jay corks Cash with the bell. Mark goes for the pin, but Cash kicks out. FTR finally get the big rig on Jay for the pin, and they win the second fall. And there were so many teases in that second fall where it looked like the Briscoes were going to win 2 falls. They were going to win both falls and take it. Like, so many times. They did such a great job on that until they finally got the big rig. So that ties it up. So much stuff here. The crowd at this point, they're going nuts. They're loving it. There's an ROH chant, which was very nice to hear. I'm glad they didn't chant like AEW.
No doubt. Yeah. Also, there was a man in a Macho Man shirt who was just having the time of his life, just fist pump. So it was a lot of fun for that guy specifically.
At one point, they actually did a bit of a ref bump, but I liked the way they did this ref bump. I thought it was cool because they made it look really convincing, and it was Dax doing something with one of the Briscoes, and he just happened to fall the wrong way into the referee. It wasn't it looked genuine, like a realistic kind of thing. So referee's taken out, the Briscoes take over. Jay Gibbs docks the drill pile driver, goes for the pin, but of course there's no ref. And I love it, the crowd counted the pin. The crowd was like so into this, they're like counting the pin. Gets up to about 20 or so. They get the big rig on Jay again, and Cash goes for the ref. He's trying to revive the ref and get him over there, but it took so long for him to get the ref there that by the time they got there, Jay managed to kick out. There was a "This is awesome" chant at this point because it was friggin' awesome.
Indeed, it was awesome, yes.
The Briscoes got the Doomsday device again on Dax, but Cash broke up the pin. The crowd's just freaking going nuts. They actually, what's his name there? Cruz actually announced that they were at the 40-minute mark, and they were. They were at the 40-minute mark. He said there was 20 minutes left because it did have a 60-minute time limit. So they were teasing that. So, of course, anytime they do that, you instantly think, as soon as he did that, I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to go the distance. They're going to go the distance. They're going to go the distance. But they didn't. They did a spot where both Briscoes had them in submissions, which was really great. But this was so awesome. They have both of FTR in submissions, and both of them, Dax and Cash, they grab each other's hands so they can't tap. The strength of each other, and we can't tap. I thought that was one of the coolest tag team kind of spots I've seen. I just thought that was really, really great. Eventually, Dax gets to the rope. He breaks it up. Oh, and then this spot was insane. Cash and Mark were up on the top rope, and Cash gives him a crazy suplex backwards to the outside through a table. And it was a friggin' nasty bump through the table.
Yeah, it reminded me of Dragon Lee's bump through the table in that match. Like, Mark Briscoe, it looked like he hit head first through the table. Like, head made contact with table. Head first, then cement. Like, oh, it was a tough landing.
The good thing about it is that was it for them. They were done. That took them out of the match, which I'm like, good. That's it. Nobody popping up after a crazy spot like that. That was it. They both just lied there until it finished. So Jay got the Jay Driller on Dax. He kicked out. Crowd's chanting huge for FTR. And then Dax did the pile driver off the top. He did a pile driver off the top on Jay and pinned him. Yeah, you better pin him after that. See, that was the other thing I loved is that, yes, you should be pinning a guy after that. And, well, yeah, 51 minutes. I just thought it was fantastic. It was everything I expected, except that I really did think it would be more Briscoe style. And I love that it was more FTR style than Briscoe style. And it was great to see the Briscoes show that they can do that style. It's like when I was a kid and you'd see Bruiser Brody, and if he fought Abdullah, crazy brawl, but if he fought Ric Flair, good technical wrestling match. And that's kind of what we got here with the Briscoes.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a classic tag team match. Absolutely brilliant. I will say that the first match, when that match ended, I thought that might have been the best tag team match I've ever seen. And I didn't think that for this match, but that's not a complaint. Like, this was absolutely a banger. Like, one of the matches of the year for sure.
I think so. And I think, again, I would take it over the other one, just because we rarely see the Briscoes in this kind of match, and I really enjoyed that. I loved the break from, like, okay, we don't have to have, you know, 20 minutes of crazy plunder or 20 minutes fighting in the crowd. I liked seeing wrestling Briscoes. I thought it was great.
That's a fair point. That's a really good call, Mouth, for sure.
Okay, so to finish off the show here, Cash gets the microphone. He tells the Briscoes, come on, you guys, get in the ring. He goes, let the people show their appreciation for you. They all shook hands. And Dax, boy, Dax was in heaven. Dax was in heaven here. He's hugging people in the crowd. He's hugging his wife. And he gets in the ring and he says, motherfucker, I love pro wrestling. And I cracked up. I cracked up when I said that. And I, at the same time, they're going, wow, you know it's genuine. You know it's genuine. He goes, you know, I always talk about how much I love my family. He goes, but, you know, I want to tell you how much I love you. And he points at the crowd and he goes, pro wrestling, you saved my life. He goes, you can call me a mark. He goes, but I love this shit. And so he was just so incredibly happy. So they're in there, they've got the belts. And then just as the final image for the show, the Blackpool Combat Club come out, or the members that were there. So we have Rigo, Claudio, and Wheeler Yuta, of course, and they're kind of just like holding up their titles, but nothing happened. And no one, they stayed up on the ramp. FTR stayed in the ring, and it was just kind of a long distance stare down, I guess. And that was it. That was how the show ended. You know, a show like this with those two final matches, and there might have been issues, and maybe you shouldn't have put the tag match at the first, but I mean, those two matches, you know, Roosh and Dragon Lee. And Yuta and Garcia, this was a very good show. Might have not had the best build, but neither did Forbidden Door. I enjoyed it. I totally give the show a thumbs up.
Oh, absolute no-brainer thumbs up. This had NXT TakeOver vibes. I was worried when they started adding matches to it that it would become too long. It would become, not that they're bad, but it would just become every AEW pay-per-view we've ever seen, right? But it wasn't. It felt like something new. It felt like Ring of Honor.
You know what, Matt? That's a great point, because Tony Khan, having bought it, he could have easily revamped it and give it a kind of a paint job. And you're right. It felt different than AEW and felt different than WWE. And yeah, it felt like Ring of Honor, but it was just so nice to see them in a good size arena. And the other thing, good camera work, a good sound. I mean, there were a couple times where I saw a couple of weird shots pop in there, but again, better technically than most Ring of Honor shows are, and that's a real advantage, and you have to have that if you want to lure people in too.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's perfect. There's going to be a couple bumps in the road. There were a couple like spots, Jay Briscoe, there's a dive missed here and there. Like, these things happen though. I thought way better than usual. Definitely thumbs up on the production side. Commentary brilliant. Some of the best matches of the year. Like, go watch the show. It was great wrestling show.
All right, Joe, you said you wanted to wait till the end, so let's hear it.
Okay, so I agree with you guys. Thumbs up. The in-ring was really good. I was really impressed by Rick Abani and Caprice. They really helped the show for me more than
absolutely
anything else.
Absolutely.
I know you weren't too high on it compared to some of the other matches, but I really, really liked Deeb versus Martinez, mainly because it looked like a fight. It did look smooth.
It was not smooth in certain parts, for sure.
And it was intense. And I liked the fact that they didn't try to outdo Roosh versus Bandido. They wrestled their style of match. They kept, like, they started slow and they just kind of kept that theme going. I thought it was really good. FTR Briscoe's great match, although I'll admit, and I think we're splitting hairs here, but I still preferred the first one over this one. I just thought, like, near the end, it got a little too crazy with the near falls and stuff. But I mean, that's a very, 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 very nitpick. It was still an awesome, awesome match. And again, I'm going to come back to the world championship match. Got the shortest time out of all of the title matches.
It is weird, like that. In terms of that, like, the placement doesn't bother me, but the fact that it was only 10 minutes, yeah.
Absolutely. You know what? I think more than anything, Dan, I think that probably bothers me more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I understand, and I think Matt, you're the one that said it, that, like, you know, from a booking perspective, traditionally, if you're not in the main event, you want to be in the opening match. Cool, I get that, but again, I didn't like the fact that, like, I remember when it came on, I was kind of watching it, and then it was done, and I'm like, what? You know what I mean? Like, that, I think that's really what bothers me more than the placement. Although, like, yeah. I still have an issue with that.
Yeah. Well, I think it is weird because you have two guys that, you know, can go, and then mm-hmm. you have these other matches that got more time that didn't need that extra time. So I really want to hear from Tony Khan what the thinking was on keeping it to such a short match like that, because that, to me, you've got two guys here that, you know, can go and build and do a match. Why not give them 20-25 minutes, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other part of it too is because, like, Claudio just started, so would have loved to have seen him have a bit of a showcase,
right,
you know?
Right?
And Gresham absolutely could have given him that showcase match, right?
Yeah, you know what, again, I think because Tony Khan is a fan like we are, and I think he's one of those guys, much like me, that has seen Claudio get abused for 20 years. And it's, I honestly think he wanted to jump the gun and be like, man, I want to give Claudio his first big title win. I think.
No, and again, no problem.
That's part of it.
No problem with Claudio winning. I love the fact that he won. I just don't like, I think it's the length of the match that bothers me more than anything else.
All right, we should let Brad, the dad, get in here and have his say, because he's been manning the ship for us here and keeping everything on track. Brad, how did you feel about tonight's show?
Hello, friends. I figured out how to use my mic, mouth.
Good. That's a good start.
It's a good start. First time, long time. Yeah, it's it's amazing to have watched this show. I really enjoyed it. My son came in from a family gathering. My family was nice enough to let me catch up on some sleep I lost traveling through Pearson this week. And so they were out and about. I got up to watch the show. And my boy sat down and watched. And that's the first time he sat and watched a pay-per-view that didn't involve me feeding him snacks and bribing him since the NXT days. He was watching that opening match and he was like, this is great. He's like, is this show like this all the time? I'm like, yes. And then he's like, okay, where can I watch this? And I'm like, good question.
Yeah.
Match of the night for me though, was, I gotta say, I think it was the Pure Rules match. I just like the difference of the style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a nice change of pace on a card like this, where you have all kinds of different kinds of matches. It just sticks out and it makes, it's like the Heritage Cup on NXT UK. Just give you a little variety, yep, a little, yep, spice of life.
Actually, to jump in on that point too, like, I think what made Roosh and Bandido even better was that it was the only match that was like that. You know what I mean? You had a bunch of different matches that, and because that you had different style matches, they all stood out and they were like, they all got a bit of attention.
Yeah. Yeah. No, in terms of that, it was a good mix. You know, I just loved seeing the Briscoes in a solid wrestling match instead of a friggin' free-for-all brawl. I just thought that was fantastic.
That was definitely something different for sure.
Okay, although we got a lot of blood, boys. That was a lot of blood in them. And I don't mind that. It's a pay-per-view. You know what you're getting. And it was blood that was well-earned, because it was blood from hard-hitting, not from... Well, other than the ring bell, which was, if you're getting hit with the ring bell, right? Like, you're supposed to bleed.
Yeah. But those chops, I mean, again, like friggin' Dax's chest. Good Lord. I've never seen it split open like that before.
It was the hardest of hard ways. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was crazy. Now, do we have anyone that wants to talk here, Brad? Or
can we start with the poll?
Yes, of course.
All right, I'm going to launch the poll now. I'm not sure if we get the vote or not, but it looks like we don't get the vote. So it's our friends who are watching along in the Zoom room. You guys get the vote on the match of the night. Your match, your options are Claudio versus Jonathan Gresham, Dalton Castle and the Boys versus the Righteous, Wheeler Yuta versus Daniel Garcia, Roosh versus Dragon Lee, Mercedes Martinez versus Serena Deeb, Samoa Joe versus Jay Lethal, Cash Wheeler and Cash FDR versus the Briscoes, something on the pre-show or something from AEW TV this week or something from Raw, in which case we won't have to go back and watch it.
Yeah. Someone's going to vote for that just to make me watch some shit over again. Don't make me watch Stephanie's pathetic promo at the beginning of SmackDown there.
And then the other question I put in there just for fun, was this show worth the $40 Canadian that we spent? Yes, no, maybe so.
I thought so. $40, that's pretty cheap compared to most pay-per-views. I totally thought it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Matt.
Oh, sorry. UFC runs you, what, 99 these days?
Yeah, like, I don't think it's quite that high. It's like 69, 69, okay. I think. Yeah. It's crazy, though. I agree.
But don't you have to have ESPN Plus in order to get it? So you're basically paying an extra $10 a month as a kick in the butt?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Joe, yes, no, maybe so. How do you feel about $40?
I'm going to go with maybe so, but only because I was kind of half paying attention. Like, I think I gotta go back and rewatch this, and see some of the details.
See if it was worth your $40.
But you know what? That said, though, I'm glad it was over at 11.
Man. Again, it was, if you add the pre-show, it was 4 hours, but it never did it seem like it dragged or anything like that, right?
No, and I mean, even FTR Briscoe, even though that was a long match, it didn't feel like it was a long match at all.
No, that's right. It didn't drag. It kept you captivated for sure.
I'm sorry I put the joke poll in there because it was Roosh, the women's match, and the tag team main event, and then apparently Mouth has to go back and watch something on Raw.
There's a split. The poll is split 25% everywhere. I love it.
But now for the $40, two people are for 50 yes, 50% maybe so. So I think most people are pretty happy with the price tag on this pay-per-view. So
definitely I have no problem with the price. I was actually happy when I phoned in to order the pay-per-view and find out that it was a little bit cheaper, because even the AEW ones are more expensive than that, are they not? Yeah.
Yes.
So
yeah, I think AEW ones are like 40 US, so that's about $53 Canadian, give or take.
Okay, so who do we have here, Brad? Do we have anyone that wants to yap on this one? I don't know who's up after this one. I know it's Saturday night too, so people should be awake.
Well, I'm wondering.
And of course, look, Matthew Smith, I voted for Mouth to watch Raw. Of course you did. Why? There was nothing with Shane McMahon this week. Why would you want me?
Oh no.
Actually, speaking of McMahon, Mouth, while we're waiting for someone to raise their hand, should we open up the can of worms right now?
It's obviously one of the biggest stories ever in wrestling. It's going to be the biggest story this year for wrestling, absolutely. I mean, it's something that we've all joked about forever, that he's going to die there, you know, he's going to die at Gorilla or whatever, and that he's just going to go on and never stop until he dies. But obviously the issues that have come forth and the stuff brought up by the Wall Street Journal and all these accusations, either he realizes he needs to get out of there or he was somewhat convinced to get out of there. It's a weird one for sure. I don't think it's a work. Okay. Let's put that to bed. I don't think it's a work. I don't think it's an angle. I don't think it's leading to something like that. But it is, it's like damage control. It's the ultimate damage control where Vince himself has to actually get the fuck out of there. I don't know if it'll get me watching WWE again instantly. It really depends on who gets the control reins after him. But it's a major story. You know, I don't know if he ends up being, you know, even though he says he's retired, he's still phoning in his ideas every week, like a lot of cult leaders do when they get busted and they get thrown in prison. They just have their minions work from the prison and get their ideas out anyways. So I don't know. I mean,
he still will have all the voting shares, right?
So right.
Like that doesn't change, which means that even though he's not, you know, he's not like the official leader on paper, I mean, everything's got to run through him anyways, right? So, you know, he has the ability to say, no, I don't like that. And okay, I'm not going to vote for it. You know what I mean? So I still think he has he's going to have a lot of power still with the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's the big question. Like, give it a month or three or a year and see if anything else comes out. If all this passes, is he going to try to come back? Is he going to put his feet up on an island and just be satisfied with his life's work?
No, I don't think he would come back. And from a, like, forget wrestling right now, like, cause there's a lot more going on than just wrestling. Most corporations cannot go through multiple CEO changes in months. Like that would kill shareholder and like sponsor confidence. So if he's retired, and now again, it's Vince McMahon. Okay, so I get that. But just looking at it from a business perspective, I would be very shocked if Vince comes back.
Can I ask a really dark question? Who thinks this might kill him? Because I had that thought today. I was worried that this might cause Vince, like he's been doing this for a long time, and I've seen this in my line of work where sometimes people go and do things over and over and over again, and the actual routine helps keep them young, helps keep them very strong. And now that Vince is kind of getting out of the routine of being backstage at wrestling shows and running this stuff, man, like could this be the end?
That's very true. I mean, that's one of the things they say about getting older, right? Is you got to keep active. You got to keep something going. You got to keep, I mean, I kind of saw it with my own grandfather who ran his own garage in my hometown. And for years, you know, fixed everybody's cars, and the garage was a center of attraction in this small town and everything. And when he retired, it was not pretty, man. He just kind of stayed at home and grumbled a lot and drank. And even as a young kid, I kind of went, man, you should have just kept working. I mean, I don't know why you stopped when it seemed like you were enjoying it. And now you don't seem to be enjoying anything. So, it could go that way.
Mouth, can I tag out? Because we have Jake from the Windy City who would like to slide in and take my spot.
Of course, Jake. Yes. What's up, Doc?
Hey, how you guys doing? Great night. It's great to see you. Great to see you guys again.
Yeah. So what'd you think of the show? Sorry.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, first of all, let me just say I paid the full $39.99 for the show, and it was definitely worth it. I had a lot of fun, and this brought me back to, you know, those peak takeover eras, and it was an amazing show. It turned out great. I kind of agree. Agree in terms of like, I was a little shocked that the world title was in the opening spot, and was a bit more shocked that it took a lot less time than most of the other titles. I did not care about the six-man tag title thing. We have a lot of titles as it is, so I don't know why the need for that. And I'm not the biggest Dalton Castle fan, so yeah, whatever. So, but dude, like FTR Briscoe's being the main event, right call. It was dope to see Claudio get his first world title. And, you know, Yuta Garcia was a technical chess match of, you know, one up manship. And obviously Rush Dragon Lee was terrific. And I'm really excited about the future of Ring of Honor. We still don't know what's going to be next, what the next pay-per-view will be, if there's going to be even more of a distribution platform. But so far, this is a good start.
Yeah, this is tough, right? Because the show is so good, but they don't have any way to build stories, really, right? I mean, they can take a little bit of time on AEW and stuff like that, but really, those shows are packed enough as it is, and even then, guys don't get on there that should be. So Tony Khan really needs to figure out what he's doing in terms of the television, or getting a deal somewhere, because it really needs that weekly TV. Even if it was still just an hour, they need to have that weekly TV.
I do appreciate that the countdown show that was released beforehand. I mean, that was very well done and really built up, you know, the proper aggression that it needs. And Samoa Joe was amazing in that. So kind of reminds me of the old UFC countdown shows. So really proud of that, and yeah, definitely worth the money. If any of y'all haven't seen Death Before Dishonor, go out of your way to do so. So, I would say close to show of the year. I'd still put Supercard of Honor, to be honest with you, as my number one so far. But yes, like really happy that this happened. And I'll say one thing about the Vince thing. It's sad because like you know, we've talked about Vince for so long. I'm not the one that likes to celebrate a man's fall. It's kind of unfortunate, but you know, as long as we criticized him, it's interesting because I think it's a good time that he does step down when there's plenty of time left on the TV deals with WWE, with along with, you know, with Fox and NBC Universal. This gives them a. This is going to be a big test for the WWE to see if they can still draw ratings and be successful without Vince. If this happened during the renegotiation period, it could have been very bad. So I guess before I go, I think my one question here is, do you think the chances of the company being sold within the next few years, does this increase the probability of that?
Yeah, it certainly could. I could certainly see that happening now. I mean, Vince was always the one thing I thought that was preventing that from happening. I could see it certainly happening. How much it affects is going to be huge, obviously. But I hope if someone like... I worry that Stephanie's in head of creative, you know? I wish Triple H was more based in creative, because I think he's got a pretty solid vision. I mean, what we saw him do with NXT, right, was pretty great.
Unfortunately, unfortunately, on Fightful Select, they're saying that Bruce Pritchard is still booking the show. And so, I mean, it's
seeing Bruce Pritchard's basically Vince's right hand man.
Thumbs down on that.
Yeah, right. Well, and then, and if that's the case too, that's very easy for McMahon to get his shit in there, right? Because he'll just, you know, Bruce Pritchard's gonna say, Bruce is gonna still do whatever he wants, right? So, in that way, you know, even if Vince ends up in jail, he can still phone in his, he can still have that pencil in his ear, right? So
I hope Kevin Dunn is not far behind, though. So,
I mean, I think a lot of us would like to see Kevin Dunn. I mean, that's one of the things that kills me about WWE even more than the storylines and stuff is the production. I just hate the style. Stylistically, now the show drives me nuts.
That's what I like about camera
work, like the camera work, the formatting of the shows, like it drives me crazy.
The thing about Claudio's spin. I'm just so happy we haven't seen cut, and zoom. Like, right? It's a
they kept it on one shot. They left it on one shot while he did it. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it's looking forward to tomorrow's show with Mike to see him follow up on this. So, yeah, that's basically all I got, guys. And, yeah, thanks so much for having me in, and hope you guys have a great weekend.
Oh, thank you very much, Jake. Nice to hear from you, my friend.
Thanks so much.
All right. So who's next, Brad?
We have, an SNME favorite, Tom. Come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right or SNME Radio.
So I guess I did not. I thought it. I was going to go for $30 and not $40, so I didn't buy in. I'm glad Joe did perform and did perform for a long time. Because I was scared when he didn't show up at the end of Rampage to save Daniels, that it may just be a squash match because he might have been not as healthy as he wanted to be, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely, it's a good call. I thought you meant Joe Aguinaldo for a second there. Joe of Samoa, yes, definitely. But he looked great. He's aging, right? But the match was fine. The match was excellent.
Hey, he was still doing all those crazy dives and stuff, right? Like, so I thought he looked very good, you know.
And I'm very glad that you guys got to see a great performance tonight, because obviously the last couple of days have not been good for wrestling fans. And every time you see a McMahon or a McMahon henchman come out and try to sugarcoat everything for the fans, it's sad, and it makes you really want to turn it off.
Well, certainly the Stephanie thing to me, the whole thing just reeked of desperation, the way she came out like that.
That was incredibly cringe, whole thank you, Vince thing. Go ahead, Matt.
I just classic WWE. It was happening. They were chanting, thank you, Vince, and she stopped them so she could tell them to chant thank you, Vince. Yeah. Like, that alone was like, oh, we might not be out of the woods yet.
You know what I mean?
Like, that alone is so WWE. Just let the moment happen. Why do you have to stop the moment to then force it yourself?
Yeah, I think
was even worse.
And that's the thing. Like, I think, look, I get it. Like, Vince has done a lot for sports entertainment, pro wrestling, for a lot of the performers, not going to knock that, but that was just, it did not come across well.
No,
they did that kind of stuff. And it's like, guys, back up and like, go ahead. Yeah, I agree.
No, she seemed completely nervous. It was an act of desperation. And then, like you say, they wanted to chant, she stopped them. And then when she wanted them to chant, they didn't want to chant, and it was incredibly weak.
Yeah.
And at the end, and it just kind of died off, and they went into the show. And I'm like, so I thought for sure that we were going to see a video montage of Vince's greatest hits on SmackDown. Like, I couldn't believe that we didn't see some sort of montage. In fact, but maybe the issue is that half the shit he did as Mr. McMahon would not look good at a time when he's up against the wall. You know, you're not going to show any clips of him with Trish Stratus.
Oh my god!
At this point, right? Because yeah. it's just
the,
gonna, it's
the genetic
just gonna say,
jackhammer.
Yeah,
stuff,
you exactly. know I mean? All that kind of stuff is not. So then after I thought of that, I went, okay, then yeah, I guess I'm not surprised they didn't do a video package. Yeah. But if that's all they do. I'd be shocked if that's all they do. I can't believe they wouldn't at some point, maybe even on Raw this week, you know, oh, it was announced that Mr. McMahon is finally going to retire and blah. Here's a great look back at, like, they've got to do something. I can't believe that Stephanie coming out and saying that and that's the end of it. We're never going to hear about it again.
Classic WWE desire, my sacrifice. By Creed,
oh, Vince
McMahon, where y'all now with me? And it's him versus Stephanie McMahon. I quit. I love it. I love it. I can see it now. About
again, I would hope though, like, because again, that's all the work. Like, we are also talking about, you know, some pretty serious allegations. So I would hope that the WWE think tank, like, are a bit more intelligent about it. You know, before they do something like that, you know what I mean?
Thank you for saying that, Joe. We're having fun here. It's the after party after all, but yeah, let's not lose sight of the fact that this man lost his job because of serious allegations. That's not to be laughed at. That's a good point, man.
Now, I don't even know if they put him in the, or if he's put himself in the Hall of Fame yet, but that would be something that he would do. That was something they would do when they do that. And I think that would be down the line, because I'm thinking they would actually smarten up after a while.
I think
time to breathe.
They might, after the air clears, maybe, you know, a few years down the road or whatever, put him in there.
Maybe not next year, but he's going in.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly. He's going in eventually for sure. Yeah, yeah. All right. Anything else, Tom?
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I will see whoever is here next week. And I think people will not be as happy as they are today.
There you go. Accurate prediction from Tom. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thanks,
thank you,
Tom.
Much.
Nice to see you, my friend. Yeah, I think you're bang on with that one. SummerSlam, it might not be as critically acclaimed as this show was right here.
Oh, right. That's next week, right?
Yes.
Sure, it is, buddy.
Yes,
sure
it is.
And the day after that, Ric Flair's final match. God willing.
That one, I will not watch that. As much as, you know, I love Flair, I will not watch that show. No, I am not putting any money in Conrad Thompson's pocket. I'm so, even though there's other great matches on the show as there well. Are. There's no way I'm putting any money into that. I don't want to see it.
Wait, could we make this a challenge? Maybe there is a way we could have you see this match.
And what's that, Brad?
Okay, so we are just about at 350 people on our YouTube channel. I think if in the next week before this, we get over 400 subscribers on YouTube, I think that's a sacrifice you can make for 50 subscribers. What do you think, Matt?
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's.
What
it's,
if we get the 500 subscribers? That's 150 new subscribers.
Why are you so keen to have me watch this?
I'm trying to get subscribers, Mouth. I'm just.
Oh, I see.
I'm shamelessly plugging.
Okay, it's going to have to be like 2,000 or 3,000 before I hear it, I think.
I'll go back and watch it. I got to be honest, as provided Ric Flair doesn't literally die in the middle of the fucking ring. Now, like, I'll probably go.
It's crazy. Like, I mean, look at how much blood. Look at how bad he, like, in that angle they did with Lethal and Jarrett beating him up. Jesus Christ, he bled like a stuck pig.
Oh, this man's going to bleed in this match. Don't get it twisted.
Oh, no, absolutely. I know he is, but it's just not good, man. The issues he's had and stuff and. I don't know. I mean, he's gung-ho to do it. No one's going to tell him he's not going to be able to do it. He's gung-ho to do it, so.
Hey, Matthew, you want to see Leave the Memories Alone? Because I think that's what keeps playing in my head right now. Yeah, every time I hear Ric Flair, I just think of that great ending, like literally one of the best endings in wrestling. And he gets the beautiful send-off on Monday, and then he's literally wrestling 3 months later.
Yeah.
He and now this is what, 10 years later?
Yeah, at least exactly that way. Exactly. It's got to be at least 10 years ago. Right. So, no, I agree with you. It's just like, should have just left it where it was. But see, the thing is, WWE wanted him to retire then. He didn't want to retire then. Right.
No.
Yeah. No. And like anything, if the person doesn't want to do it, they're not going to do it. So,
you know what is crazy though, and I don't know who had this in the office pool, but Ric Flair lasted slightly longer than Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon officially retired before Ric Flair did. Think about
I
that.
I guess. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. I guess.
That's a good after point, all man. This, that,
the consortium was me. That, woo! That, and he outlasted.
Thanks to Matthew Smith, 2008 was the Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair match.
So, yeah, look at that. Even more than 10 years ago, right? You know, that's crazy. 14 years ago, yeah.
Actually, and how's this for irony? Actually, I think it was Jake that posted this on the Facebook page, but it's like Vince retired and, like, there's a Jimmy Crockett promotion show coming
yes.
up.
Yes. Yes. I saw that post too.
Exactly. That was great.
So he goes, and the person said, they finally won the war or something like that. The Crockett's finally won the war.
And, and Jeff Jarrett is in WWE and Vince McMahon is not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I can't even comprehend that one.
Yeah.
I need to sleep on that. Need some spider math. I don't even know. That's...
Yeah. It's true. It's true.
All right, Mouse, I think it's time to go home. We have no more calls on the line, brother.
Yeah, I think it's time to put it to bed. But thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, you guys, for staying up. Thanks, you, Brad, for putting it all together and getting it together. Thanks, you, Joe, for staying awake. Thank you, Matthew, for whatever it is you just did there.
I am sweating profusely into my eyes.
Oh, I'm
just trying
okay.
to work that out right now.
Oh, there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse than the sweat in the eyes. It's the worst, yeah. All right, so well, that's good. Go have a cold shower or jump in the lake or whatever. How do you stay cool?
Well, yeah, there's definitely, I just came back from up north and I was doing some fishing and some swimming and it was great. And now I'm back here and I'm just sweating. And that's a good question. How do I stay cool?
If you have any Matt, you're always cool, Matt. Come on. Come on, dude.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. But yeah, no,
make it make a drive down to the East Coast, brother. That's how you stay cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Jump exactly. into jump into the ocean. But yeah, no, I got a couple fans on me that are going to be turned on approximately 0.3 seconds after we close this up here.
All right. Well, I'm just going to continue to drink more cold beer. That's how I stay cool. Nice. So take care, everybody. And yeah, don't forget, be back here again next Sunday. Is the paper on Sunday or Saturday? Sorry.
I believe
Saturday.
It's Saturday, yeah. man. It is Saturday, July 30th, July SummerSlam. What is this blasphemy?
Yeah, really, it's usually always in August. Yeah, that's so weird. That is weird.
Actually, really quick story before we go.
Yes.
That was the first pay-per-view that I ever watched in a theater with live audio wrestling. When you guys used to do it.
Right.
When you guys used to do it up in North York. That was the first time
that's where the station was at that point, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And you were already working up there.
I was working up there. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Memories.
And next in sequence, you will hear Mike McGuire will be there and he'll be back on the radio tomorrow. Plus, if you're a patron, you get to early and ad free. You'll get to hear him.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Like, let's be honest. Who here really, really, really wants to hear what Uncle Dave has to say about all of this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You want to get the latest and the greatest. Dave will have it all. That's for sure. Yeah.
Mike's got some big guests coming up. Your boy Conrad might be making an appearance here on Sunday night's main event, I believe.
I think he's going to use some of that on this week's show. Yeah. He just did the big interview with Conrad. Yeah.
So we're doing some good work. I'm proud to be part of the team with the legend Dan the Mouth Lavransky, legend Joe Aguinaldo. Thank you all so much for having me. My sweaty opinions, much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt. Not quite a living legend yet, but on his way to getting there.
Hey.
How's that?
My heart. I love it.
All right, guys.
And thank you for everybody in the Zoom room. And we'll see you guys. Well, next week, if not before. Goodbye, friends.
Goodbye.
Okay. Stop. Stream is off, so we are out of... I'm going to hit stop on the recording. And...